This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio has a limited supply of water and an ever-growing need. The city and the area is becoming more populated and developed, and climate is getting hotter and more uncertain. We don't want to go to the way of the Mayans and have big cities disappear. We have to be smart, prepare, and work together. And so today, we have the entire water cycle in the studio today, from the underground aquifer to the pipes, down the pipes to the San Antonio River and down to the Gulf. We're talking about the region's state of water, and our guests today are Robert Puente, the president and CEO of the San Antonio Water System, Suzanne Scott, the general manager of the San Antonio River Authority, and Roland Ruiz, the general manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority. And it's great to have all of y'all in the studio this afternoon. Our phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can call in with your questions and comments, your concerns, or your vision for San Antonio water use. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. So first, let me go to Robert Puente, president of SAWS. If you could kind of talk about why we have the three of you here today. Why is it important that we have a coordinated approach and a way of looking at our water?
You know, there's a thing called One Water now, and essentially is making sure we optimize the use of water. And I think if you look at the three of us, it's kind of a One Water thing where we get a permit from the Edwards Aquifer Authority, we SAWS, other entities also get permits to withdraw water from the Edwards Aquifer, use that water in some way. A lot of the water that we use goes down our toilets, our sinks, our showers, to our wastewater treatment plants, and then we put it into the San Antonio River, and that's where San Antonio River Authority and Suzanne Scott, their leader, have the San Antonio River in charge of the San Antonio River, and hopefully we are good stewards of that, and we work well together, and it's just a somewhat of a cycle, not necessarily that rain cycle that we always hear about, but a governmental permitting type of cycle that we're all involved in.
And so Roland Ruiz, as manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, there's a lot of limitations on what you can do and what your purview is. Could talk about, explain that, what it is that as the Edwards Aquifer Authority, what can you do?
Well, what we were specifically authorized to do is to manage and protect the Edwards Aquifer System. And when I say the Edwards Aquifer System, the Edwards Aquifer doesn't know political boundaries, but we've been designated to manage a part of the aquifer system that we commonly know as the San Antonio segment. So that's from Uvalde County west, coming this way all the way to the east to Hays County and parts of Caldwell County. So unlike other groundwater districts, and there are roughly 100 groundwater districts in the state of Texas that are mostly constructed along county political boundary lines, we transcend that and we are more of a regional regulatory authority designed to take care of the resource as close as possible as we can to where the resource exists. And so, of course, our history, the background as to why we're constructed that way is because of a lot of conflict, litigation, dispute over how the resource was to be managed when once it was not managed in any regulatory way. So we're limited to that, but within that, we have plenty to do. There's the permitting program that Robert alluded to, which is kind of the crux of what our work has been for the first two decades of our existence. Because we've been successful in that, we now have an opportunity to focus on coming back and ensuring that all that work was for naught, and work in whatever way we can collaboratively with others to ensure that the quality of the water that's in the aquifer stays as pristine as possible. So sustainability in our view is a balance of those two, quantity and quality together. And I think our future is going to largely evolve around that concept. How can we ensure the sustainability of this resource, not just through regulation, but through partnership, collaboration, pooling of resources with our agencies and water utilities, such as you see here around this dais.
Water quality, those are words I associate with the San Antonio River Authority and Suzanne Scott, because I know that's a major focus of what you, when we talk about the water that people use locally, and then maybe it'll go down the storm drain, and it'll end up in our creek system. It'll go into the San Antonio River, and we want that water to be clean and contribute to a positive ecosystem, right?
That's correct. Thank you for having us here today, by the way. And you started out by saying that the city is growing and the demands on water on all of us are really increasing. And I think when you talk about water quality, the biggest threat to the water quality in our rivers and creeks is from stormwater runoff. And a lot of the times the sources of those pollutants come from all the impervious cover that we are creating as we grow as a community. So one of our focuses right now is to try to figure out how we can grow more sustainably. We still need to grow as a community and create jobs and really create that economic engine that San Antonio is so known for. But we need to make sure that we do it in a sustainable way. SAWS has been very effective in their conservation efforts over the years and have really trained all of us for generations to really make sure that we know how important that water is that's coming out of our tap. Now we want to shift that focus to make sure that people understand that what they do on the land ultimately impacts the quality of the water in our rivers and creeks and ultimately the aquifer, because a lot of that water ends up going into the aquifer. So we need to think more holistically about how we manage this water.
So let me go to Robert Puente and ask you about water rates right now. And there are some questions about that. What is happening with the water rate situation?
Well, 5 years ago, our city council unanimously voted to give us a 5-year rate increase dealing with the water supply fee. We have a water supply fee, water delivery, and wastewater. But essentially, that water supply fee for the 5 years was majority of it to pay for our desalination plant on the deep south side, and the Vista Ridge Water Project. We are now in year 4. Year 2020 will be year 5, and so we have a pre-approved rate increase that will go in effect January 1st, 2020.
And so I think the important thing is to recognize that this came about 5 years ago, and this is not connected to the current situation. Like, recently, the mayor has asked the SAWS to be a larger contributor to the budget, so it's not because of that.
This was 5 years ago, as we mentioned, and 5 years ago, we got a 2-year rate increase for all of the things that we needed, wastewater and water delivery, in addition to that, 5 years of water supply fee. So this particular fee was obviously talked about, discussed 5 years ago.
Okay, so we're talking about San Antonio's state of water. Right now, we're not in a drought, but it is hot and dry. We saw a lot of water fall out of the sky earlier this season, but we had what people are calling a flash drought. What does that mean for us locally? And how are we going to be looking into the future about San Antonio water, our water use, our conservation habits, as we move towards a more uncertain climate, a climate change, a warmer planet? Number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We have the San Antonio Water System, the Edwards Aquifer Authority. We have the and the San Antonio River Authority with us in the studio. If you've got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the state of water for the region. With us in the studio, Robert Puente, President and CEO of the San Antonio Water System, Suzanne Scott, General Manager of the San Antonio River Authority, Roland Ruiz, the General Manager for the Edwards Aquifer Authority. And you can call in with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980. Kim is on the line. And Kim, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good morning, or good afternoon. Hey, it's Kim with Shute. How are y'all? I have a question. I reported the news back on the day in Applewhite, and that was our plan B. And as we all know, poor Lila Cockrell, I mean, she really tried. And I remember thinking, wow, we don't have a plan B, unless you really think, are we going to be able to complete Vista Ridge and get that water supply from Austin, not only to help the water supply, the amount of water, but isn't it a good source of water since... I mean, that is going to happen, correct?
All right, Kim, thanks. It's good to hear from you. Thanks for calling in. And Robert Puente, what's happening with Vista Ridge?
Vista Ridge is in two sections. the section from Burleson County, northeast of Austin, to Bexar County, and then within Bexar County into San Antonio. We, San Antonio Water System, are responsible for the infrastructure upgrades within San Antonio. Those are scheduled to be complete early next year, 2020. The pipeline and the pump stations that are coming from the source of water in Burleson County, they are probably 99% finished. They will start testing in the very early part of 2020 to make sure that that project's online. It's scheduled to be online on April 15th of 2020. So plan, this plan is happening. It's on the verge of turning that tap and being able to rely on this particular water source.
Who's going to manage the pipeline?
The pipeline will be managed by an operator that we still haven't formally selected. We have the opportunity to select that. There's a lot of conversations going on as to who it will be. But it's an entity that will do the operations and maintenance on the pipeline and be responsible for operating it from the source to the site where we take the water into our system.
And so Kim asked about Applewhite. People may remember that. San Antonio voters rejected that twice. So what happened? Well, where are we? What's our alternative water supply? You mentioned desal earlier, but we also have we have a water bank, right?
We have nine different water sources. The big one is the Edwards Aquifer Authority that we all know about and cherish, Trinity Water, Medina Lake, Medina River, although we are not currently using that water. We have the Carrizo Aquifer in southern Bexar County, Carrizo Aquifer from Gonzales County. The Vista Ridge also will be from the Carrizo and Simsboro Aquifer in Burleson County. So a lot of different water sources, surface water from GBRA, surface water from Lake Dunlap, and what you mentioned is the underground source, that underground storage that we have, where we are currently banking about 3/4 of the amount of water that we use in 1 year.
Is there still a Lake Dunlap?
Well, there's still water coming from Lake. I'm putting the air quotes on it, from Lake Dunlap.
So that's one of the Guadalupe Blanco River Authority lakes that are. It's been dewatered, or
correct. That dam broke. There's still enough run of the river where we are getting our allotment. It's still a very small supply. It wasn't anything. This was originally a Barramet supply. So it's not a huge supply. It's very nominal, very small compared to our other supplies.
Are you part of conversations about what's going to happen to Lake Dunlap?
We are a customer of GBRA, so we don't really have a say-so in whether the dams are dewatered or not.
Okay. Another caller, 210-614-8980. Elizabeth is on the line. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I've done quite a lot of research in this topic, and I'm glad that y'all are addressing it. And a lot of the research that I've done, there's been reports talking about how there's going to be several issues that will need to be addressed in 2050. And I was just curious about what are y'all planning to do to address the water issues that we're going to be having in the future. Because I know that they're talking about how we're going to have to really drastically cut down on our water usage and increase the rates, which you guys are already doing. And then my second question is, if you guys have done any research or utilized cloud seeding, because I know that that's a resource that's being used elsewhere.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you for the call. So let's go to Roland Ruiz, General Manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority. What is the forecast for the health of the aquifer going into 2050? And 2050 actually is not that far away,
right?
So even beyond that. And then we'll ask you about cloud seeding.
I think when you talk about all the multitude of water resources that Robert mentioned, and at the core of that, the Edwards is still, I think he would agree, probably the most viable and dependable source.
It's certainly the cheapest.
It is the cheapest, and that's because, you know, it's so plentiful and it's the most stable because we've done what we're supposed to do in terms of the permitting, the conservation, and all that. So the Edwards itself, because it has a hard cap on it, legislatively mandated cap on how much could be taken out of it, and we now have a habitat conservation plan that further implements additional protections, we're really in a good place as far as the Edwards goes for the foreseeable future. Now, we can't rest on our laurels, so to speak. That's why I say the quantity, we know how much we're going to have out of the Edwards. the work that lies ahead is making sure that what's available remains of a high quality of in terms of drinkable water. So as SAWS brings in alternative water resources as they have, it lessens the stress on the aquifer. Unlike as the previous caller, when she brought up the Applewhite project, at that time there were no other sources. You know, at one time, this was a sole source aquifer for this region. It was designated as such. And so all that, though, had to happen over time to get us to where we are today, to where we've implemented the right solutions, and we can feel good about the foreseeable future. I think moving forward, what we're doing is we're looking at ways that we can better incentivize conservation across the entire region. We do have conservation grant programs that we are operating. We've introduced and launched a nonprofit conservancy to try to find additional funding for those sorts of programs. And hand in hand with that comes additional public education and awareness on how to maintain a sustainable water resource.
And so just real quickly, looking at the future of the aquifer, is there like 2050 or, you know, what's it look like down the road?
I think it looks very stable if we keep doing what we're doing. And if we
what's
can
the number
it.
One threat?
I don't know that you can identify a single threat, but certainly with population growth, all our water resources are going to be stressed. For the Edwards, as I said, that's more assured because we know how much we can take out of. But here's what we're studying now.
But we're still growing gangbusters over the recharge zone. And right now there's the talk about this Vulcan quarry, this open quarry. It's massive, and that could have an impact on water. It's right over the recharge zone, could have an impact on what goes into the aquifer.
Yeah, those issues are all at the forefront for us. Of course, our regulatory scope on those issues is quite limited. So we're trying to build relationships with those industries to make sure that they're doing the right thing. In addition to that, we're studying the interplay, the interface between the Trinity Aquifer, which is found largely up in the Hill Country, and the Edwards. We know that those aquifers communicate with each other. They're interconnected. And so you look down the road 20, 30, 40, 50 years, it's important that we know how much recharge to the Edwards comes from the Trinity. And so we're undertaking right now an interformational flow study to try to gauge just that, so that if something needs to be done differently, we have the science to back it up and to inform that. And I think that's also where we are in a much better place today than we were 20 or 30 years ago, is we've developed a pretty robust body of science that we can now rely on to inform policy. And hopefully we can diminish the political negativity that has come and has been part of the process in the past if we let science kind of take the lead on these issues.
The Vulcan Quarry folks, they're asking for a waiver for a water pollution abatement plan. Is that something that you would think you would be against, a waiver?
Generally speaking, that's a TCEQ state process. And the way that the system works, we will comment on those water pollution abatement plans. Obviously, we think a water pollution abatement plan is generally a good idea if you're building on the recharge zone, whether it be a quarry or any construction project, because that gives
But the waiver so that they would be able to get away, you know, have more effluent, more problems, you know, more contaminants. Is that, you would be against that?
Well, I wouldn't take a position today because I don't know enough about what their waiver request is. But generally speaking, water pollution abatement plans that make sure that you're growing and doing business in a responsible way are a good thing.
Suzanne Scott, over at the San Antonio River Authority, sometimes we have too much water, and that's when we have our flooding.
Yes.
And that's a big part of what you do.
Yes, sir. We are in the process right now of updating all the flood maps. A few months ago, NOAA came out with their new Atlas 14 data, which looks at the average rainfall for our district, our area. And that rainfall rate is actually going up. So all the flood maps are based on rainfall rates. And now we're taking that new rainfall data and plugging it into all of our modeling. And then we're going to be generating new flood maps for the entire watershed. So that's underway right now. We're working with our partners at the city and the county and others to go through that process. But it's, you know, a very intensive process. You have to look at what happens in the development in the watershed, the topography of the watershed, what is going to be the future conditions for development, and you have to build all that into your hydraulic and hydrology models, and then that creates new maps. And this is a process that we've done a couple of times now. We did a pretty holistic update in 2010, and now we're going through a big new update now and spending quite a bit of money making sure that those maps are as accurate as possible. And we just recently received a grant from FEMA to support that effort, and we should be having some of the first maps updated coming out in the beginning of 2020. But again, I mean, these all link together, and as was said, we're going to have potentially more significant floods, but also more droughts, and we have to make sure that as we manage water, that we look at it in a holistic way.
So we talk about the San Antonio River, but the creek system in San Antonio is very important culturally,
yes,
and as well as, mm-hmm, you know, ecologically. So, I mean, how do y'all deal with that?
Well, our district is in the entire Bear, Wilson, Karnes, and Goliad County. So a lot of times people think we're only concerned about the main stem of the San Antonio River. Our interest comes way out in the entire watershed. So we're looking at land use throughout the entire San Antonio River watershed, which encompasses all those counties that I mentioned, plus it goes up into Bandera County and others. So we're really looking at how all the creek and the network comes together. So what you may be doing on your property that could be many, many miles away from the San Antonio River ultimately can impact the San Antonio River and its tributaries simply by the development and the conditions that are happening there. So flooding, of course, a lot of the flooding that we look at is riverine and creek flooding, but there's also a lot of local drainage issues that we also look at. So we are doing watershed master plans that look both at the local drainage issues and the more regional riverine type flooding to so that we can understand how we can identify capital projects and other maybe more sustainable low impact development strategies that can look at mitigating the impacts of floods in the future.
And the people who live on the west side of San Antonio, mm-hmm, multi-generational families,
yes,
they have a strong connection to these creeks.
Absolutely.
And they want them, you know, and we're doing a lot of work to bring them back.
Absolutely. You know, just as we did on the San Antonio River and the Mission Reach, we did an ecosystem restoration project of a previous Corps of Engineers flood channel. And that is a very popular project, and we've brought that ecosystem back to life. Similarly, those west side creeks, Alazan, Apache, and Martinez creeks and parts of San Pedro Creek, are also part of that entire network. And they are all tributaries to that same San Antonio River and were channelized back by the Corps of Engineers in the 60s. And now we're going back into that project and wanting to do ecosystem restoration. So we are doing it right now. We're working with the City of San Antonio, adding a trail network. The Howard Peak Greenway Trail Network is already being built along those west side creeks. We have a Corps of Engineers project that we want to move forward with the ecosystem restoration components of those creeks to do some very similarly what we did on Mission Reach, to bring back the habitat, but also continue to provide the flood protection that those creeks do.
Right, and speaking to the community has a say in how
absolutely
all these things. It's all because it's their creeks.
That's absolutely their creeks.
All right, we're talking about the state of water in San Antonio. We're going to take a break. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. I've got some calls on the board and got some emails. I got to get them on the air. We'll do that when we come back from this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Researchers who embarked on a study on the heart health of American Indians knew they had to respect certain traditions.
Any study that was done has to obtain tribal approval before it begins.
More on the Strong Heart Study and remembering a champion of San Antonio culture next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the state of San Antonio water. With us in the studio, we have the president and CEO of the San Antonio Water System, the general manager of the San Antonio River Authority, and the general manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority. And let's get some callers on the air, 210-614-8980. Hi, Bob. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air, Bob. Go ahead.
Thank you. what happens to all the water after it rains? It just goes downstream and it's lost. Is there some way we can start saving that water, like build several mid-gallon tanks and fill it with rainwater and use it later?
Right, Bob, good question. So all the water comes from the sky at one point or another. That's part of our water cycle. And are we doing a good stewardship job of capturing that? First, let's go to Robert Puente. You guys give away rain barrels.
Yes, but what he's talking about is a much bigger scale, and that is the worst thing we can do because that water is so dirty. It comes off the pavement, it comes off streets, picks up oil contaminants, picks up all kinds of animal feces. And if you store it, we have to build big, huge storage tanks. So right now, that particular concept is not a good idea because you'll see around town, you'll see these water storage tanks. So you'd have to build a whole other system like that to capture rainwater, and then you would have to build treatment plants to treat that water. The biggest rain barrel we have is the Edwards Aquifer. If we just treat it right and protect it, I think that's where we come best to do that kind of thing.
And it's filtered, right?
And
right.
It's filtered. But Suzanne, she's got a lot to say about this, I bet.
All right, Suzanne Scott.
Well, and Robert kind of hits the big points here. I do think that Representative Larson has asked for the state to study the concept of scalping floodwaters and putting it underground, potentially like in an ASR type of situation, similar to what we've done with clean groundwater that SAWS has put into the ground, into ASR. He's looking at wanting to see, similar to the caller, if there's some way to capture that floodwater. And so there's probably going to be some activity throughout the state to look at a demonstration project to see how that can work. Obviously, when the water's coming fast and it's flooding, you're going to have to take that water off and put it into some sort of a treatment or some sort of holding reservoir of some sort, and then treat it before you would inject it in any kind of aquifer, because you don't want to inject the dirty water that would be coming from a flood. So I think there's some technology that's being looked at through the state, and we can see how that works. But there are some challenges with it, but we understand and appreciate why people think it's a resource, because you see so much water. The other thing that I think we need to look at is when water's coming down the San Antonio River, we need to make sure that water goes to the coast. It's important. Those pulse flows are very important to maintain a sound ecosystem in our bays and estuaries. So we can't scalp all the water. We have to make sure that we think about the environmental flows that are necessary to keep our coastal communities healthy and a strong ecosystem there. So there's a balance that needs to be obtained. But I do think that looking at using floodwater for water supply is something that's going to be looked at in the state in the future.
Oh, another caller. Let's go to Zeke. Hi, Zeke. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I guess I'm coming at it from the other side of the equation, which is conservation. And it seems incredible to me that we're almost 2020 and we're still flushing our toilets with pristine potable water, and that's for most of us. And I guess my question is, how much of our precious potable water is used to flush our toilets? And I'm saying, as an alternative, to use gray water of some sort, but and also, is there anybody, any countries that are doing a good job with that?
All right, Zeke, thank you for the call. So Robert Puente with the San Antonio Water System, people are using your beautiful, clear, clean water to flush toilets.
And it's fluoridated and chlorid. We put chlorine in it too, which is a big expense. The problem is for the average person is the infrastructure. They would have to have some kind of pipeline going directly to the commode to bring in recycled water or to bring in gray water. Who covers that expense? Home builders do not want to do that. We're lucky if they build an energy efficient home as it is. So there's a whole lot that goes into it, not just the infrastructure of the particular home, but the infrastructure that SAWS would have to do. We would essentially have to double our existing lines so that we could provide recycled water or gray water to each individual home so that they could flush the toilet.
So we would have to have like a whole parallel water system. That means another set of pipes all throughout the city and yes. through the homes. And then we have to make sure that they never get their lines crossed.
Exactly. And so what you can do is what Steve Henderson did downtown and with Credit Human. He is building a building that's going to use 97% less water than a typical building of that size. 97%. How is he doing it? Condensate, rain capture from his roofs. But that's a cost, a private cost that he is bearing for his shareholders. But he's able to show them that it's cost effective. So if we can get that kind of a builder to do more building, this can happen.
And I think, too, another point that I think would be important to add to what Robert is saying, and maybe the caller would appreciate the fact that although we don't have double systems coming to our home, the water that's flushed in that toilet is goes through the wastewater treatment plant. They do reuse it. There's a whole system of a purple pipe system throughout the entire city that SAWS manages that allows for this water to be used to irrigate golf courses. Some of industry also uses it. It also augments the flow in the San Antonio River when we can't pump the Edwards Aquifer to keep the San Antonio River flowing in very dry times, which, of course, the San Antonio River is an important economic generator, and you'd want to make sure that that river flow is sustained. So, I mean, I do think that we have done a lot with recycled water in our community, and SAWS continues to get accolades throughout the nation for that program. And it is really a very important in the whole system of how we manage water here. That purple pipe system has been very critical.
Let's go to Jennifer on the phones. Jennifer, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I had a question. As Kinder Morgan begins construction for its Permian Highway Pipeline, which will go through three of our aquifers and affect 4 million people's drinking water, how do you guys plan on dealing with an eventual pipeline leak?
Okay, thank you for that call. And that goes straight to Roland Ruiz, our general manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority. Give us a little more background, if you can.
Sure. She's talking about Kinder Morgan, which is developing a pipeline from the Odessa Permian Basin, ultimately to the Houston area, to deliver natural gas via pipeline. So that's an important thing to know. It's a compressed pipeline carrying natural gas, not liquid, not petroleum products, but natural gas. Understand that the Edwards Aquifer Authority has no regulatory purview over the operations of those sorts of pipelines across the state or even within the Edwards region. That is a Texas Railroad Commission purview, and they regulate all that. So, but that said, this pipeline will transect a portion of the Edwards to the northeast of us, up around Hays County, and we've met with Kinder Morgan folks as a matter of communication and openness and trying to understand their project and making them aware of any concerns that we have or have been informed of. And as I understand, that pipeline is designed to carry only natural gas. It will not ever carry petroleum products unless that decision is made sometime in the future. And if that happens, what they've told us is that if they come to that decision, they've put in their the documents of their easement documents with landowners across the region that if they ever do that, they have to come back and renegotiate all those easements. They will also be subject to a completely different permitting process it'll have to go through again. So there are some level of assurances that those pipes won't carry, you know, things that are dangerous to the water supply. That said, we're watching as an interested, you know, member of the public with a specific interest in protecting the Edwards, understanding that we don't have a regulatory stake in it. So we're trying to be accessible. We're trying to get information that we can share and share information from what we know of mainly in the construction process of that pipeline is going to cross a portion of the recharge zone.
All right. Another caller, Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
I was wondering how I can monitor my water usage when I'm a tenant that doesn't see the actual bill.
Okay. Robert Puente with the San Antonio Water System. Conservation is a big part of your communication line. How do you reach out to people who don't see the water bill?
Unfortunately for tenants such as the caller, it's almost impossible because the apartment complex manager probably doesn't know either. They may get the bill. They may get the bill Dallas and pay it out of Dallas. So for the individual tenant, it's very hard to know and to participate in seeing their water usage go down and have some, you know, when we do water conservation, almost anything that we do, we want that feedback to know that we are doing the correct thing, that we are showing progression in our goal. And so these tenants, unfortunately, don't have that opportunity. There are some conversations about individual metering for different apartment complexes, each individual apartment unit. Obviously, apartment builders don't want to do that because it costs a lot more money. Sometimes they want to do it because they can shift that cost over to their tenants. So it's really a question of the builders and what they're willing to do.
And people can sort of just adopt their own good practices on their own?
Hopefully they do, yes.
All right, we're taking another break, and we'll continue our conversation when we come back. We're talking about the state of water in San Antonio. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the state of water in San Antonio. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We've got the dream team here of San Antonio for water. I got the president of the San Antonio Water System, Robert Puente, the general manager of the San Antonio River Authority, Suzanne Scott, and the general manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, Roland Ruiz. Did get an email from Stephen. The primary climate challenge for San Antonio is flooding, and this can be an opportunity for local water needs in times of drought if strategies are put in place to capture and hold surface water for irrigation and other non-potable needs during flooding events. So not necessarily save it for drinking purposes, but for other, you know, uses. Let's go back to Suzanne Scott, because you addressed this earlier, but I just want to hit it really quickly. Why that is such a big challenge, trying to capture the water when it floods. And we're doing that in little ways.
Yes. When the floods come, they're often very fast. We're flashy. We're in flash flood alley. So the water comes very quickly. And to know exactly where it's going to flood and be able to scalp that water at the time when it's coming and being able then to store it so that it can be then used for other purposes, you would have to put in an entire new infrastructure for that. So we do.
So let's at least keep it from going into people's homes.
Exactly. And I think that what we're trying to do is through sustainable land use practices, low impact development, and other strategies that mitigate impervious cover, our idea is similar to the caller. Let's capture that water and make sure that if there's a parking lot, instead of that parking lot just running off and going directly in to a creek, maybe have more of a bioswale or a green buffer zone of some sort of filter strip where the water can be captured, cleaned, and then discharged. Then it can be used for the purposes of irrigation for that location. It can also recharge if it's over the recharge zone. There's other benefits that we can do to capture that water and use it in a more productive way.
So there's a space on Fredericksburg Road. It used to be a shopping center, and I think the county has turned that into an area that can capture flood water. And
yes.
Now they're going to turn it into soccer fields as
it
well.
It is, and I was going to mention that. That's a multi-purpose project. It's a detention facility called Laddie Place. And that facility captures water during flood events, and then it releases slowly from that facility to go back into the natural drainage system that's there. And then when it's dry, it's used for sports complexes like soccer fields and that sort of thing. And we do that all over the place. That's Almost Basin is the same way. Of course, if you remember the big floods, Almost Basin holds a lot of water. Many of our golf courses up on the Salado watershed are actually they're also flood detention facilities, McAllister Park, Walker Ranch, all of these, Silverhorn Golf Course, all of those are flood retention facilities. Some of them recharge, others hold water and then release it more slowly so that it doesn't cause flooding downstream.
And thank you, Mayor John Tobin, for the Olmos Dam.
Yes.
Let's go to another caller. Let's go to Annalisa. And Annalisa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. And Annalisa, I can you have the radio on. Okay, hang on, Annalisa. We'll get you on right after this other caller. Let's go to Mark. And Mark, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
All right, thank you. I really appreciate this forum. It's been very informative. Just a quick question about fluoride. And why are we still putting fluoride in our water? Isn't that a carcinogen in large amounts? And there's been some studies to show that fluoride is not the best thing to be ingesting. So I don't know. Is that the wife's tale, or am I right with that? And why do we still put it in our water?
Okay, so our fluoride is put in the water. San Antonio voters went on that, and they said this is what we want. And Robert Puente with the San Antonio Water System, it's your job to put fluoride in the water.
Well, you are correct. In large amounts, it's not good for you. And so we've put a very minute amount, enough to make a difference in our dental health. Essentially, as was mentioned by our host, our city council voted and essentially mandated that any water served to the public.
Well, we had a public vote.
A public vote, and then city council ordinance. Okay. That essentially mandated that its water utilities put fluoride into the water stream to address this issue of dental health.
And there has been a study that looked at the dental decay that we've had in children in San Antonio since we started adding fluoride, and we've seen a major decrease.
Correct. And this is something that we obviously test for in our water supply. We make sure it's the right amount. Different sources have naturally occurring fluoride, and so we adjust accordingly to make sure we don't go over the amount that we're not supposed to.
And now Annalisa is back. Annalisa, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, go
yes,
right
thank
ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, so Mr. Puente mentioned, danger to the aquifer from non-point source pollution. And years ago, the EAA decided not to regulate impervious cover to address that. But can Mr. Ruiz talk a little bit about what the EAA is doing for water quality, and including talking a little bit about San Antonio's program to protect the recharge zone through purchase of conservation easements?
Okay, Annalisa, thank you for that call. And Roland Maurice, General Manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, water quality, the stuff going in, input into the aquifer.
I think Annalisa mentioned at the end of her question the conservation easement program that the city, the taxpayers, the citizens of San Antonio, have voted to tax themselves on numerous occasions an 8-cent sales tax for the purpose, express purpose of protecting the Edwards from the threat of non-point source pollution. And so through that program, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how many hundreds of acres of properties have been placed in conservation easement over the recharge zone, not only in Bexar County, but to the western counties where the largest portion of the catchment area for the Edwards is. That program has been very successful. It allows us to work in a non-regulatory way with landowners. It's a partnership between the city, the Edwards Aquifer Authority, and then the landowner, and then in some cases Texas Nature Conservancy and Green Spaces Alliances, where you come together and you have a willing buyer and a willing purchaser, in this case the city of San Antonio. We, as the third party, qualify the properties based on the geologic assessment of the value of the property, and those properties then remain in perpetuity in their present state. They don't get developed. So that's a real innovative and creative way to get to water quality protection. I think moving forward, another opportunity we have, it kind of goes to what Suzanne mentioned earlier about land restoration, land management practices. We know that the climate change question is out there, and that potentially has an impact on our water resources, of course. If we can get into a position where we can go back on these properties that have been placed in easement and improve the soil conditions, the lands on those properties, such that they withhold more water rather than scouring the areas within the watersheds, that's going to help improve water quality as it gets into the streams and then recharges to the Edwards. So there's a lot of creative ways we can attack this water quality question without heavy-handed regulation.
So I'm going to ask more about climate change in just a second, but really, really quickly, I want to ask you a couple things about the purchasing of that easement, and that comes from an eighth of a cent sales tax that we have here. And that's getting ready to sunset, and there are some people who are thinking that this program may have served its purpose, and now we need to rededicate that to something else like public transportation. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, in my position as being responsible for trying to manage, enhance, and protect the Edwards, I'm always going to be supportive of anything of that would continue that program.
So you say hands off.
But well, I wouldn't say that because it's ultimately...
Well, I would say I'll put that in. Okay. But I think I got you. Let me go over to Robert Puente about climate change. So the San Antonio Water Board, they are supporting the city's climate plan. What does that mean for the water system?
What I think it means is that we're supportive of the city, supportive of our partner in this endeavor, and it really means that we should continue what we're doing at San Antonio Water System, and that is have the best water conservation programs in the country, the largest recycled system in the country, the largest storage of underground water in the country, essentially using water for that one purpose, and to continue on with the smaller things of looking at our fleet. Looking at our heavy equipment, making sure that the carbon imprint that we do have is minimized as much as possible.
So there's a big connection between water use and climate plan, particularly here in San Antonio, since the other municipally owned utility, CPS Energy, you guys can work together. Hopefully, that people are always talking about what a great opportunity the city has.
Yes. Everybody understands that the biggest water bill that CPS has is ours, and the biggest electric bill that we have is theirs. We're each other's biggest customer. So we have to work hand in hand, and Paula Gold Williams and I do, and we have a lot of joint projects, a lot of joint ideas that we have to make sure that our carbon footprint is as small as possible.
And Suzanne Scott, what does the Climate Action Plan, Adaptation Plan mean for the San Antonio River Authority?
Well, many of the adaptation strategies that are listed in that plan have to do with flooding and looking at low-impact development strategies that I've mentioned already here. So we are very actively engaged. We've sat on all the committees and really wanting to try to promote more sustainable development as we move forward. I mean, I can't emphasize enough that, impervious cover has come up several times here, and I just think that as we grow as a community, we're going to have to really think about managing more sustainably and looking at how to develop in a more holistic way and looking at making sure that our watersheds are protected. And flooding, of course, is a big part of that. If we're going to start to see more floods, we're going to have to figure out how to mitigate them. And we can't just build ourselves out of it. We're going to have to use the ground and the land in a more sustainable way to mitigate the impacts of floods.
Okay. Suzanne Scott, General Manager of the San Antonio River Authority. Robert Puente, President and CEO of the San Antonio Water System. Roland Ruiz, General Manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority. It's great to have you here this afternoon. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Rospiedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.